Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Health Blast Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher of Alternative Medicine and Wellness Radio. It is going to be a great year, 2015. We are going to have several of our guests who are inspirational, telling their stories, sharing a lot of their tips about how to live a holistic life and love it. We all have all kinds of challenges these days, and we say we'll try things. We don't get the greatest results, or sometimes it's just mediocre. But we're going to learn to love a holistic life. Isn't that great? We're going to learn that it's great to get up in the morning. It's fabulous if it rains, and it's absolutely incredible that we have these challenges and all of the things we can learn from that. And isn't life just a roller coaster? So thank you so much for joining us. Please check us out on Health Blast Radio on Facebook, and also Health Blast 2015 on Twitter. Also our website, drjeanettegallagher.com, for more information. We also have a women over the age of 50 group starting February 1st, which will be sharing a lot of information about how to help us and ourselves. As we are women, we are also caregivers. We are also part of this world that will be bringing more compassion and empathy towards others. Please do join, and please do check it out on our website, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. And now, back to the show. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Health and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Sedona Talk Radio, Blog Talk Radio, and we are also archived on iTunes. It's a great day here in November, and thankfully we've finally come up against some cooler weather. But now we're coming up on the holidays, and today our topic is going to be talking about how you communicate your way through cancer. And, you know, I know everybody's had these issues where the holidays seem to be the very hardest time. People seem to be holding on to their baggage. They be holding on to their pain and suffering and don't really want to share with anyone else. And then when we come to the holidays, people know something's wrong. And it tends to be a time when people may or may not be prepared to share what is happening with them and may or may not be prepared to be able to ask for help in what's going on in their life. So today, my guest is David Tabatsky, and his book is Right for Life, Communicating Your Way Through Cancer. And I really think this is a very important book because it's small. You're able to write in it. It has some topics and stories to provoke you to think about things and then to be able to put your words down. It's not about reading somebody else's story all the time. It's more about writing your own. Because really, when you write your own, you're able to see, is this really what I'm all about? Is this really what's going on? Or maybe you can put down your dark secrets that you haven't put out before. And eventually those can turn around and help heal your heart. David, he is an author of many books. He'll be telling us about those today, but he also teaches writing workshops at cancer centers. And I think that's really great because so many people say, write it. And everybody will say, well, you know, I have a day book. I have, you know, my date book. I write things in, or I have a journal, or maybe I just find some pieces of paper and I write things down and put them in a box. And you know what? It really doesn't matter how you write. It just matters that you write something. But you don't have to always be the way other people want you to also. So it's all about shedding a lot of those beliefs and thoughts that you have to be perfect, that you have to be right, that you have to do everything everyone else's way. This is really new breaking ground for you, and it's really about you creating the rest of your life. So, David, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm listening to all the things you said, and it's like check, 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 check. You're just hitting, you know, you're hitting it right on the head. Especially as we head into these holidays, people are more vulnerable, whether they're sick or they're not, or whether whatever issues they have going on, or if everything is just totally fine. The holidays, and we're surrounded by all the media hype, and it sets the bar really high to feel like I'm having a successful holiday. I had a great Halloween, a great Thanksgiving, as if that's the only thing that determines whether you're successful in life, is whether the turkey came out well and everybody came and sat around the table and were perfectly smiling. I mean, we don't really live in the Stepford Wives world, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And, you know, realities are shades of gray. They're not black and white, whether it was perfect or it was a disaster. There's so much room in the middle that's really much more authentic and genuine to what someone's real life is. So that's the kind of stuff that I'm trying to help people with. That's really the starting point. It's sort of like the starting point isn't white or black. It's all these wonderful and challenging shades of gray.
You know, I think it's all about history, too, because I'm almost in my 60s. I'm sure you're, I didn't ask you beforehand. I'm sure you're generations older, correct?
I'm a generation older.
Are you, you're older than 30 and 40, right?
Yes, I'm older than 30 and 40, but I'm not as old as the two of them added up, no.
Right, but, you know, if we look at it, though, but, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, if I grew up in the 50s and 60s, and that was when everybody was looking for that perfect holiday, that perfect life, and everybody expected that picture. And then even when we got closer to the 80s and 90s, whoa, then it was about affluence, it was about you having everything and looking perfect. I mean, I lived in Arizona, the land of the perfect. They don't have any potholes, everybody is nip-tucked, and all of their houses and their garbage is all behind, you know, big, tall cement walls. You know, that's just
right,
the way
right,
the world
right,
there.
Of course.
Yeah. And then we look at it, you know, what happened with the 2000s, I think it really is these last, I would say probably 5 or 6 years, is that a whole lot of masks have come off the world, a whole lot of, you know, tipping the ladders. If you thought you were that high, well, here you go. Let me just show you what it looks like from my point of view, which is down on the ground. And a lot of people have been brought to their knees, and that's sometimes not a great thing, sometimes a great thing, but it is the reality of what life is all about now. So many people are at this point of, you know, their kids and their children have, you know, learning deficiencies, the elderly people, they're going into hospice or they're living alone, people in the middle, their houses are getting taken away, their jobs are getting taken away, and then they hit the wall with these medical conditions, you know. And I always say to them, when you hit that wall and you implode, usually that's when they come to me. You know, being a naturopathic physician, they're like, my doctor can't fix me anymore, I'm coming to you, I've got 6 months. You know, here's my stuff. And it's like, really, we have to really think about that, because it's not really about fixing all the time. It's more about living every single minute for what its value is.
Well, sure. And, you know, we're surrounded by, so much media. We know, like you were talking about growing up during that time when you people look at what's on television, and whether it's Ozzie and Harriet or the Brady Bunch or, you can go on and on, and you know, all the show, everything looks pretty idyllic. And if it's not, if there's a problem, it's solved within a 30 or 60 minute time frame, depending on the length of the show. So it all wraps up in a pretty nice ribbon. And then people are like, wow, stay tuned for next week when the next adventure comes that'll end happily, just like, you know, Disney, like all the Disney, you know, that Disney syndrome. And, you know, of course we know that life isn't really like that, but then we get all these pop psychology books. And if we look at one of the most famous ones back from the late 60s, I'm Okay, You're Okay. There's something really, at the same time, there's something great about that. There's also that other reality going, I'm okay. And I go, wait a minute, no, I'm really not okay. And what do I do? You know, so it's the same kind of thing when we try to tell our children to raise your hand and admit, I don't know, that's coming. That inevitably will lead you to a point of strength when you keep it inside about something you don't know, even if it's a simple thing that you don't really know the answer to the math question, or you don't understand a concept in a piece of literature. And you keep a lid on it, well, then you'll stay not knowing and not knowing, and that'll build up into become, a big problem. So it's always better to say, raise your hand, I don't know. It's the same thing. If the child who's afraid to raise their hand and say, I have to go to the bathroom, ends up peeing in their pants when they're tiny little kids, because they're afraid, like, maybe I'm doing something wrong, or I shouldn't call attention to myself, or any of those things. I mean, we don't know what the psychology is for that individual child unless we examine what happens, you know, within the confines of their own home, you know, with their families. But the end result is, whether you come into it from the left or the right, up or down, people are still compromised in their ability to communicate for any number of reasons, like I just mm-hmm. cited a whole bunch of examples. So what I'm trying to do with Write for Life and is to help people find tools, simple tools. A lot of them they know already, they just forgot. So sometimes I feel like I'm just really reminding them of what they know and encouraging them to say, hey, you already know this. You got this. I got your mm-hmm. back too, but you already know this. You just have to remind yourself and then take ownership of it and go with it. And then the other stuff, yeah, it's new and it's challenging and it's frightening. So let's figure out what those are. And by writing them down, we take a big, big step towards being able to potentially manage them. For example, things we're afraid of. I mean, whether it doesn't matter whether we're in the context of a cancer diagnosis or not, mm-hmm. we always have new challenges that we are afraid of, whether it's the 19-year-old guy who's just simply afraid to go ask the girl out on the other end of the bar because he finds her attractive and he's afraid to go say hello and just make that first step. So how do we break that down? Are we afraid to ask our doctor a question because it might open up some things? What is this, why I'm feeling? Why do I have this pain in my side? Well, I don't even want to ask because then I might get the answer and the answer might not be good. So I'll just pretend that I don't have the pain. Or mm-hmm. I could go on and on and on. There's all these things. So there's fears on many levels. Obviously, when there's a diagnosis of cancer, the person who has been diagnosed is afraid that their life may be shortened and compromised. The caregiver is at the same thing. Am I going to lose my loved one? Whether it's a spouse, child, parent, friend, neighbor, business colleague, whatever that may be. For every single cancer diagnosis, there's easily 100 people affected by that one person's diagnosis when you take those rings around that person's tree, you know, from family, friends, colleagues, all the medical staff that deal with it. Those are legitimate hearts and minds working too, although, you know, sometimes we forget and we take them in we know these people in clinical context and we forget that they're living, breathing human beings with feelings that they have to maybe keep a lid on all the time. You too, you know, in your work.
Right.
So all of us are challenged at some point in trying to figure out how to best communicate in a given moment, in a given context. And so what Write for Life is about is try to give you some more tools to do that, that are easy, that are accessible, that are very, very flexible as far as different people's facility for language, different people's facility for expressing themselves through words, and so that people can come into it at any level. It really is kind of one size fits all, depending on where your starting point is. Anybody can jump into it.
Right. And you know what, too, it's like so interesting because so many times I'll always say to people, they'll come to me and the first words out of my mouth will be is, what is eating you? In other words, what are you keeping inside that is so deep and dark that you believe, if let go, would just destroy everyone's picture of you? And how much validation do you give that? But also, how tight do you hold on to the string to that? Because sometimes that is just what will set you free. That which we hold on so tightly is generally what will set us free. When people go to the doctor, you know, and he asks the questions and you fill out the forms, you're only telling them what you want them to hear, what you are holding on to, you know. And that's
mm-hmm.
why I used to do home visits, you know, all the time. And I'll say, that which you are not telling me is exactly what will set you free. So what is it? And people will say to me all the time, you're the truth doctor. And I said, yeah, because, you know, I don't have time, and neither do you, to sit there and continue to play this outside facade. You know, if you really want to hear something, let's work at it, you know.
Mm-hmm,
and to be
mm-hmm.
angry and have pain and to say it through tears and to say it through frustration and fear, that's the best place to be. I mean, that is the tipping point.
And everybody's going to come to that. Everyone will come to that in a different way. I mean, you know that.
Right.
You know that better than I do. you know, depends on their age, on their background, on their cultural history, just their own sense of personal decorum. There's so many different factors involved where people have their trigger points and then their release points. And so, it's a big landscape to cover. But really, what it boils down to is as much trying to also teach people what listening affords them. So I do some exercises in my writing workshops. I do some kind of a small group interviews where it's easy to ask the questions. Oh, so when were you diagnosed? Or how do you feel about such and such? Or who's most affected by this right now? Those questions are not too hard to come by, but then are you really then going to listen to the answer? So how do we train ourselves to really listen to people who matter to us? That's one thing that I think doctors are challenged by. If you're a doctor and you're seeing, I don't know, 10, 20, 40, 80 patients in a day, depending on the practice, it's really hard, I think, for a doctor to listen well each time. Because they're trained from medical school to pick up certain signals and to medicate the results of those signals. That's really
right.
The bottom line. And it's almost like a policeman, protect and serve.
Yeah.
I mean, the doctor is doing their own medical version of that, protect and serve in a sense. So are they always really listening to the subtext of what someone's saying? Are they able to assess the patient and go, gee, this person is really good and facile at expressing themselves. I know I'm getting a clear and thorough picture of their health. Well,
but that also depends upon the doctor too, because there are different classes of doctors. I know we as naturopathic physicians, our appointments are 2, 3, 4 hours sometimes. You know, we're not seeing 20, 30, 40, 50 people a day.
Well, because
your
training and the whole nature of that work is to treat a full person. You're not treating just their liver. You're looking at how is this liver one of their organs, and what about all the other organs in the body that, obviously there's some chicken and egg there. How did the liver get affected by everything else, or how did the liver affect everything else as a result? So there's you're going in the front and the back door and all the different side doors. But that's the luxury of that type of practice. But the majority of doctors don't have that.
We do know.
So, right, of course. And then it's not their fault. It's the nature of it's the nature of medical school, and it's the nature of the American healthcare system. So these are tough battles to fight. And so what I try to talk to these patients about is, you might love your doctor, and I hope you love your doctor, whatever doctor you're going to now, the primary one, whether it's their primary GP or their primary oncologist or whoever that person may be, but you only get to love them for about 15 minutes at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine if you were out on a date and you only had 15 minutes, you want to make the most of it. Well, are you just going to leave it up to the whims of the moment and hope that you are suddenly a great improviser and you can just rattle off all the things you want to rattle off the top of your head? What about preparing? If you only had a 15-minute business meeting, you would not walk into that meeting in the conference room without an agenda. So why would you think you're going to go see your doctor without an agenda? And I'm always surprised to see a certain segment of every group I work with, I see jaws dropping. I see eyes getting bigger. And I'm like, wow, I'm glad I'm saying this stuff, because remember the first time I said it, I thought, oh, gosh, I'm saying stuff that everybody knows. They're going to think I'm totally stupid. What is this guy doing? You know what I mean? And it's just sort of, and then I realized, wow, this is really necessary. And so I make a point of doing that. It just so the pragmatic and practical use of writing. Just write down the questions that you want to ask your doctor. Don't trust the fact that you're going to remember them in your head. You just got diagnosed with cancer, or your loved one did, and you're going with them, and you're stressed, you're afraid, you're anxious. You know maybe you don't feel well already. And then you're losing some sleep because you're worried. et cetera, et cetera. You think you're going to be at the top of your game to remember everything off the top of your head? Who are you possibly kidding? That's just silly. It's just kind of, you know, without trying to, I don't make anybody feel bad, that's just silly. So write your stuff down. And then the next step is, well, these are the questions. Are these the questions you think you're supposed to be asking because that's what you saw on TV? Or are these the questions that are really germane and meaningful for you? And are you really asking what's for you, what's right for you? So say the questions out loud. Practice them ahead of time with your partner, whoever your partner may be, your the primary person who's going to go to that appointment with you. Or if nobody can go with you, then even more important that you practice that. Let them give you feedback. It's like you say, David, that doesn't sound like you. Why are you asking that in a very clinical way? I mean, yes, we need to have medical information, but that's all covered. The doctor's going to do the blood test. They're going to do the scans. You'll get all those numbers and the results and everything. What do you really want to know? What do you need to know? And how do you want to phrase the question so that you will give the doctor the opportunity to answer it in a way that is meaningful for you, not for 100 other people? So this is where I try to guide people.
But also in your book, you have a lot of things in here, and you have a lot of blank pages where there's a lot of questions, and I really find that they're fabulous. Because things deciding, you know, about how you're going to spend your day, what you're going to notice. You talk about travel games. And, you know, I think it's so interesting when the other day I was with someone, and we were going down the street, and within 2 minutes I noticed fog coming off of the golf course. I noticed the ducks playing in the canal, and we pulled into the gas station, and I noticed a woman sitting next to us crying in her car. Yet when I asked the person who was with me, I says, what did you notice in the last 2 minutes since we left home? They said, oh, nothing. That guy that cut me off at the light, is that what you're talking about? And I'm like, look at how two different ways we can visualize the world. And, you know, you just have to make a choice which one you would rather have. I'd rather have mine, you know. I'd like to notice little things, you know.
But I think because it's sort of, again, it's like a little chicken and the egg thing. Does it come, is it external leading to internal, or is it internal leading to external? It really doesn't matter. But when we start to pay attention to other things, when we notice the fog and we notice someone struggling in their car, we notice what burden the gas station attendant may be carrying or not, or how he just seems so joyful just to even put gas in your car to help you get where you're going to go, whatever it may be. And then all the sensory things to really be in touch with our senses, to slow down, to eat a meal, to actually taste the food. All these kinds of things lead us to a potentially higher level of life appreciation, but they also, what they do is an exercise to get us to be more in touch with ourselves, which lead us to a place where we can be more in control of our health.
Right.
Because that's really the bottom line of where this is going, to try and help people get more control of their health, whatever level of their health may be. If it's compromised by sickness, you still want to have a certain sense of manageability. You don't want to. We try to have people not be totally victimized by it, or only subjugated to it, but still have. Everybody needs to have some sense of control, even when it's compromised. You need to have something. So this is trying to give people the tools and the equipment to manifest that.
But also to be able to have a lightness about the world, because, you know, when you sit down and you write down, we always say, about your life story, and everybody says, well, I did this, I did this, I did this. And, okay, those are all great, but who were you? And so many people really cannot answer that. And in your book you say, you know, I am. that's a great exercise to do that. But also, too, to have gratitude and thankfulness for the life that you did have. In other words, that job mm-hmm. may have given you the money to be able to travel with your kids, or you may have lived in a location that you thought wasn't great, but maybe you didn't have a ton of debt over your head. So looking at the golden lining, as they would say, to almost mm-hmm. everything and appreciating it, because, you know, you can have all the hums and haws you want, but you can't change it. So you may just as well find a way to reframe it and just believe and move to the next day and just make a little more lightness, because you've got still another day.
There's that classic story of the person who's wealthy. They have possessions beyond anyone's imagination. They're, but then they get sick and they're alone in a hospital room and nobody comes to visit them.
Right.
Because they've been so busy making money that they went, whatever, the higher and higher and higher, floor mm-hmm. in the tower,
Right.
So, and then, and all they really know how to talk about is things that are related to money. Then what did they really gain out of all of that effort and all of that, all of the communication, all of the heartfulness, all of it put towards material gain? Then where are they when their life is at stake? You can't take it with you, So yeah, let's pay attention. It's a question of paying attention to what you do have, not what you don't have. So on a given day, I've worked with people all the time who are, either they're in a workshop right before they're going into chemo, or they're coming, or even spending time sitting with people one on one. I've done this in several hospitals where I've, just visiting and working with people one on one when they're actually getting the drip, during however long that protocol may be. Sometimes it's 45 minutes, sometimes it's 4.5 hours, it depends, and working, with them one-on-one and visiting with them and whoever else may be there. And sometimes it's remarkable, because just as a third party kind of objective thing that I parachute in with my little bag of fun and help to facilitate some conversation between the two people that are there, the patient and their caregiver, they get mired into a certain rhythm, and I try and come in and whatever. I mean, I don't know if it's like sprinkling some fairy dust or something, but mm-hmm. just to have some fun. It's remarkable, too. I think people are just so pleased when they figure out, like, oh, my God, I can have cancer and be in treatment and actually still find things funny, whether mm-hmm. it's my own predicament. To get onto the other side of when someone who's losing their hair, for example, is kind of a classic example, which is for some people a real torture and a very heartbreaking thing and very, very real and tough, to say the least. For others who be able to just get just one step on the other side of it and see how ludicrous and silly it can be, how much we do get hung up on that one visual identification of who we are and what happens when it's taken away, or I wouldn't say that's necessarily taken away. If you look at it, say, my hair is being replaced by my scalp.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my head. It's my skin. And so it's not necessary. It's not a foreign body invading the space above your neck necessarily. There's a lot of ways to look at it. There's a great story in a book I did, it's about 5 years ago now, the cancer book. The 101 Stories of Courage, Love, and Support. It's published through Chicken Soup for the Soul, and it's a collection of 101 stories. There's, patients, caregivers, doctors, nurses, all different kinds of people. And there's a great story in there by a woman who's, she's in the middle of chemo, and she's coming home. She's driving herself home from a chemo treatment, and she's really tired. She's just plain old fatigued, and she stops to get gas, and then she's like, oh, I should really pull over and clean the car, And so she's like, I got to keep up my things in life, you know, that that makes me feel good. Just if the house is relatively clean, if my car is clean, then my life is in order and it's not all about cancer, you know. Life is going on and it's normal things, and which is a great thing to do. And healthier, too, because you shouldn't be living, when you have cancer, you don't want to be living in an environment where there's a lot of dust and germs floating around. You want to be living in a place that's physically clean. It's just better. She's in the car. She's with the vacuum cleaner, and she's in the back seat, and she's cleaning the back seat, and then she's like, she just feels like too tired to get out of the car, get out of the back door, and navigate her way, and then step around and open the door and go through. So she just says, I think I'm going to make this quicker and easier by just climbing over the seat. So she kind of, stretches her legs and maneuvers herself to get in, and she's all crunched because she's in a car, you know, there's not very much height there. So she's scrunched over, she's got the vacuum going, and it's noisy, and she's acrobatically trying to get from the back seat to the front seat, when suddenly she loses control of the vacuum thing. It hits her head and sucks the wig right off her head into the vacuum, and it's gone. And she, in the moment, is stunned. She's just shocked, and she kind of looks around for a second, and doesn't really even know what happened to the wig. She doesn't put it together in the moment that the vacuum cleaner just sucked it off her head. She just felt something wrong, and she looks outside, and there's a man, like kind of like a big old fat ugly man, to be blunt, standing there looking at her, and he starts laughing. Whether he's laughing insensitively or he's laughing at the absurdity of it, she doesn't know. She's just seeing this big guy laughing. And then she looks at him, and then she bursts out laughing herself. And she realizes how ridiculous this moment is, but how it can become an invitation. So she accepts the invitation to celebrate the moment. What's there to celebrate? Literally, she can't reach her arm 9 feet into a hose and pull out her wig. It's probably gone. But so what? She's just sort of like, this is who I am. This is what my Tuesday afternoon has become. It's sort of like, holy S-H-I-T. okay. And she just is laughing along with this guy, and she says, unbelievable, I make a connection with this human being in that moment, and feels totally fine about it. So she has a clean car, a clean scalp, and a good sense of humor.
And sometimes those things are the challenges that will bring us to the point that, what are we holding up? What are we trying to cover up, or what are we trying so hard to hold on to, that if we just let all that go, how much easier it'll be able to make it to the next moment? A lot of these things we try to keep up. We try to keep up our houses as perfect. We try to make sure no matter how sick we are, that there's a meal on the table every single day. All of these different things. And sometimes it's just time to say, I'm not doing it today. And just be able to honor yourself in that moment. So many people, when they really do hit those health walls, it's sometimes generally because they've been running so fast and so hard, doing for others, doing for things that you thought you were supposed to have or to be. And when you hit those walls, that's really, your inner core saying, it's me, and you're not paying attention, but now we're done.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know medically what happens. I think it's still a mystery, what stress does for us and all the different kinds of stress. That's a pretty big universe. We don't know. There's not a clear science, on that. Just like there's still certain things in our brains that are mysteries. I think the world of stress from a medical point of view is still a big, fat mystery. But it is pretty clear that too much of it is not good, right? Yeah. I think that math has been well established. And so, but that's different for everybody. I think you know, in the study of the genes that each of us have that relate to resilience, they have determined that there are there's studies that were done in England and in New Zealand, and they're working on it a lot up at Yale on resilience, and we do have actually genes, and so some people have are more disposed to being resilient, and some not as much. But it can be let's say amended, so to speak. Let's say you don't have the long genes for resilience. Your resilience genes are shorter, which would imply that you don't have as much inbred physiology for resilience, but it can be learned, it can be acquired, it can be manipulated, if you will, to get better results. And it doesn't mean that just because you have the longer genes that you're going to have the personality that's going to make the most of them. So we can break down these things and figure out how to improve them. I mean, you probably are figuring that out with your patients all the time, just based on their natural resourcefulness, where some people it just comes naturally, and other people they really have to make it up and invent it. But in either case, the results can be fairly similar. It's just how do we get there? I think.
Well, you know, I think if we could talk for a minute about at the end of your book, you talk about how to write mm-hmm. and different ways to write. Can we share a little bit of that with the listeners? Because I think that's so important when people say, I've got a piece of paper and a pen, and what do I sit down and do? And I'm just sitting here for hours twiddling my ink pen.
Well, that's really what part one and part two are about, is you know, where the book starts with, like you mentioned, the I am mm-hmm. section before, and that's how I start out all my workshops, is I am, because I think really when our lives are challenged, we need to identify who we are and how we're going to meet the challenge. And once we do that, and we take care of ourselves, and we're selfish in a good way, then we are better equipped to connect with other people. So that becomes, we go from me to you. And then comes us, which in my book is part three. How do I put myself out into the world? How do I make my story meaningful for other people? And everyone can take different meanings from the same story, depending on where they're coming from. And nowadays, with the internet, the options are enormous. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, I'm going to sneeze at any second. I don't know when it's coming. I just feel it. So people are blogging all the time. People are in forums and chat rooms and all of those things. And I think that they serve a great purpose. They really can develop for people a sense of community that they cannot have, especially people who are living in rural areas where they are physically disconnected from a large concentration of people, where people who are sick, who may be traveling an hour or two even just to get treatment every week. So to have that, to have those opportunities online are fantastic. On the other side, it can easily become a cacophony of voices, and how do I find what's meaningful for me? Or if I have something I want to say, where do I put it? And so mm-hmm. I think because there's so much noise out there, I feel, and we live in a very, very enormous world. It's not important to try and figure, I need to connect with everybody. What does everybody mean? You got to try and connect with 900 billion people in China who don't understand English. I mean, I mean that in an abstract sense, but so you want to just connect, identify what's a beginning community for me. So, for example, you there's so many websites now in the if we're talking about the cancer community, or we're talking about someone who has diabetes, or someone who has any sort of chronic issue that they have, whether it's permanently chronic or temporarily chronic. Who else is out there? Who are the other people who are dealing? Let me reach out to them first, because they can identify with me. You want to first, we all want to kind of first connect with like-minded people. If I'm a Yankee fan, I'm not going to go not going to go to Baltimore and find like-minded Yankee fans in Baltimore Orioles Stadium. I want to go to the Yankees.com and look who are the other Yankee fans. I want to complain about the Yankees, or I want to commiserate that Derek Jeter won't be there next year. So I want to talk to other people who don't appreciate that or don't identify with it. But in that universe, there's thousands and millions of people out there who are listening the same way I am. So I think that's the first place is to make a reasonable reach when you're trying to put yourself out there. And at the same time, listen.
Mm-hmm.
Find the places and go and observe and listen. See what are people trying to say? What are they trying? What kind of connections are they looking for? And how can I have my part in that? And I think listening is as important as the expressing.
Yes, I think, and so many times people just want to be heard, and that's so vitally important.
Yeah, we want to be heard, I think if we're listening at the same time we're wanting to be heard, mm-hmm. that's often forgotten. We're trying so hard to be heard that we're not listening to what's there. And so I think we need to kind of do both at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, David, it's been a great time. Could you share something else with us in closing, and then tell us a little bit more about your website and the work that you are doing? That would be wonderful.
Yeah, sure. I think that you mentioned gratitude before, and I think that this is such an important thing that can't really be ever overstated or overdone, right. Overused. One of the things I do when I do a to-do list with people, we start with pragmatic things like picking up dry cleaning and buying milk on the way home and making sure that we, change the light bulbs and things like that. But what about reaching out to someone that you haven't had contact with and telling them that you care about them, telling them that you love them and expressing it in a way that's meaningful for you, and not to wait until another day. Do it now. Do it now, right. In this moment, in this day, with where you're feeling. And that's what I encourage people to do almost in a hard-ass way. It's like, don't give me any excuses. Don't give me any thoughts about procrastination. Do it today. It doesn't matter how long it's been, whether it's been 3 weeks or 3 months or 3 years or 30 years, whatever it is, do it now. Because you know what? You may not have another chance to do it. And you have, and so it's like, you like the idea of gratitude? Oh, yeah, everybody votes for gratitude. Everybody's going to put a check mark there and say, how many people think gratitude is important? Well, the whole room will raise their hand. Okay, well, now do something about it. Don't. Give me a lame, passive raising of the hand. Take your hand while it's up in the air. Grab a pen or your keyboard or whatever it is that you're going to use, or the telephone. Hello, would you please maybe sometimes actually call people and not just text them or email them? There's a lot of power in someone's voice. And so reach out to the people that you care about, if for no other reason than not to get something back, but just because that's somebody I love and I want to tell them.
Absolutely. So many people forget about that till it's the last second.
We always forget about it. We do. We absolutely, we forget about it. But we also underestimate its power and the gift that it is. So that's what I hope all this work I'm doing is, it can help people also be reminded of and be spurred to take action with. As far as my website, I have two websites. One is just www.tabatsky.com, TABATSKY. It's my last name, www.tabatsky.com, which kind of gives a big view of a lot of the different kinds of books I've done in the cancer world. And then I've also have several parenting books and some books on divorce and I have a new book called The Overparenting Epidemic, which is coming out in November, and that I've done with Dr. George Glass, who's a psychiatrist in Houston. And that book is out in November, The Overparenting Epidemic. And then also for my cancer work, The Right for Life, there's rightforlife.info, www.rightforlife.info. And that just will give a lot of a lot of information about what all of that work is. So there you go.
Well, it was a pleasure to have you with us today. We'll be sure to put all of your websites on the bottom of today's show page, and the listeners will be able to click right directly through there to be able to get to your page and find out more information.
Yes, and people can write to me through those websites. So I really I welcome that. I always like to get letters from people, and I actually answer them. So I really, and it's me answering them. It's not somebody else. So I welcome that, and I thank you so much for having me on today. I hope that we've been able to help some people who are listening.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a pleasure.
Okay.
If you'd like more information about David Tabatsky, his book is Right for Life, Communicating Your Way Through Cancer. Please do check on the bottom of today's show page. There are links directly to his website. And thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher for Sedona Talk Radio and Blog Talk Radio. And have a wonderful day. And please do check out our other shows. And please post comments. They're always on there for about at least a year or 2 years. And hope you find something else that you like to listen to. Thank you so much, and until then, have a great day. Thank you so much for joining us today here on Alternative Medicine and Wellness. It has been a pleasure to be with you, and we hope you found more information that will be able to make your life just a little bit easier. You know, it's not an easy trip all the time in this life, and sometimes we say, you know, if I could just maybe hear it from somebody else, or maybe hear that someone else's story might be similar to mine, or maybe just gain a few extra tips to make my journey a little bit easier. Please join us on Health Blast Radio every day for the year 2015, where we will be having so many different practitioners, all kinds of authors, just regular people like you and I, having a casual conversation about a different topic almost every day. Check out our website for more information on the Women Over Age 50 group. It is drjeanettegallagher.com. You can always just Google my name, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and you will find out so much more information about upcoming radio shows, about other websites I have, other programs we are currently doing. And if you just need help, please pick any of the websites, any of the links, and send me a private message. Thank you so much for joining us today on Health Blast Radio. It's been an absolute pleasure, and please, just in the morning, before you reach for that cell phone or the television remote or even your glasses, open your eyes and say, thank you, God, for another day. It's been a pleasure. And have a great day.